This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 337 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Tori H. Thank you so much for your support, Tori.
This week, we will be discussing episode 511, entitled Journey Cake.
Before we get to any detail at all, tell me, your opinion of this episode, at the end. What is, one sentence to sum it up?
WTF, yo.
That's funny. I was going to say, holy shit. You can't even say it.
No, I just have so many thoughts because I was like, wait. So it's one thing to bring a portion of the story forward, right? I get it. But then pushing a second part of the story forward at a completely different rate than the first was so jarring to me that I was just like, wait. They're not ready for that. We can't do that yet. They don't even have this, and this hasn't happened.
And we can't say what it is. I know.
I know. It hurts my feelings we can't talk about it yet because we haven't even discussed it in the book. But I was just... I was really upset, and I'm gonna talk about it as much as I can, and you're gonna edit out the stuff that's irrelevant to not being spoilery. But I had a lot of feelings. There was a lot.
Out of all five seasons, all the episodes, 16 in season one, 13 in two and three, and 12 in four, and 11 thus far in five. Okay. I mean, I don't think anyone can argue, especially if you're a book reader, because you understand. Oh, heck, I think even a plain show watcher or a show only watcher.
But to be fair, this felt like a cliffhanger end of season episode.
Oh, heck yeah.
The way they started it and the way they ended it, this felt like this could have been an end of season episode. And knowing there's one more episode.
You don't want to see it.
I don't. And maybe this is to my... to your and my and book readers' credits to have no idea what the f*** they're going to do.
Well, we do know what they're going to do now. We don't know how they're going to...
No, they could do anything. I don't know what they're going to put in there. The only thing I know that won't be there is f***ing Murta. That's it. That's all I can say right now.
You do know what's going to be in there. We know the line or a line.
No, I don't. One line. But giving me one line does not describe everything that's going to be in the next episode. Because it could literally be anything in book six. It could be anything in book six.
We're going to see what happens to Claire. I don't know what they're going to show everything, part of things, and then they're going to have a line, kill them all.
But where the f*** Roger and Bree and Jemmy? Where are they?
That's separate. I agree.
What's happening with that?
This, out of all episodes thus far, is the most, we're going to call it the TT episode. It was the most TT episode of any episode that has been done thus far. It was like, let's hold up on the TT. That sounds really bad. And pour it all into season five, episode 11. So in the very beginning, a few seasons are shown, right? Changing of seasons. And we end up in autumn 1772.
I called this episode a cold open, literally, because it immediately went to snow. It was snow. And then a year goes by because it went to autumn 1772.
That would be approximately 1975 in Outlander TT years. And I can say that since we sent our people forward already so soon. On a return trip from Willems Creek with Peanuts, the Fab Four come across the Dutch cabin. And Claire talks about how she plans to make PB&J sandwiches. They go take a look at the cabin. Everyone is dead. Or at least everyone in the cabin is dead. And we don't know what they filmed or didn't film. It'll have to come out when they share the script. But they didn't, at least what they showed, the edit showed that they didn't go the way of the book in book six. One body, male body, I think had, it looked like an arrow in it. That was interesting, but they weren't convinced. So what they did believe or said, at least, and so we're led to believe, is that the people who died, however they died inside the house, obviously, before the fire started. So we don't know how the fire started. And without spoiling, there is an idea as to how it started in book 6, if you want to read that. That's what Roger says, I think. Well, Roger, or there's only two guys there. It was either Roger or. So they find an arrow. Is it a Native American? Maybe, maybe not. And then they're walking around and Roger finds, oh boy, Z. This, I won't give any more details, but this is also from book 6. And however, it didn't happen in the Dutch cabin. It happened in an entirely different scene. I think this is probably one of the saddest things. Not sadder than Faith, I guess. But this was hard to watch anytime I watched it. It didn't get easier. What did you think about that girl?
Well, when that whole thing started and he was like, he and Jamie seemed to be fighting over who was going to do it. I was like, are they fighting over who's going to give the last rites? And then he started smothering her. And I was like, oh, okay, not really. He's going to kill her. Okay. I mean, it was a mercy smother.
Murphy?
I said it was a Mercy's mother.
I thought you said it wasn't Murphy's mother. And I was like, I don't know who Murphy is. Murphy? Not, Murphy.
No. Mercy. Mercy's
so,
mother.
Okay, yeah. So you, that too. But what did you think about that scene? Not just about, because they didn't, they took two different things from book 6 and put them together. They didn't need to have that girl there. It was for effect.
I feel like in two episodes, last one and the one before, he went from, I can't kill a person, to, I want to kill Bonnet, he's mine, to, oh, look, some rando Summer. Chick, I'll kill her. And it felt Aww. Like, you know what I mean? It was just, it was a really strange progression for Roger, for me. Even if there was a year, almost a year, in between the last episode and this one.
So Roger finds the saddest and most pathetic creature, I think, except, oh gosh, probably even more pathetic than Mr. Beardsley, honestly. Maybe the most pathetic creature of all the books. Beardsley lasted months.
For me, the difference is that Beardsley was a he did horrible things to all the people in his life. And as far as we know, this was just a girl who potentially did nothing to anyone.
I agree with you 100%. However, just because someone's a doesn't mean they deserve to suffer physically.
He didn't suffer. He got a much better end than he deserved.
He did. Oh, I'm not talking about his end. He lived for months. Or at least a month. That's suffering. He suffered. He could feel his wife try to burn him. Of course he suffered. I'm just trying to say his end was, yes, maybe better than he deserved. I'm just saying, I think this girl is a more pathetic creature as far as the state she was in.
To be fair, that just all hinges upon the fact that we don't know that she's ever done horrible things to people. So if she's been a good person, you know what I mean? It's like, as far as we know, last night the house was lit on fire because it's still smoldering. So she's only been suffering for maybe a day. And while she didn't deserve it, you know, it's like they put her out of her misery as soon as they found her.
Yeah, I agree with you.
She's only more pathetic than Beardsley because we don't know that she was an awful person.
I don't mean pathetic.
The suffering isn't different. It's still suffering.
Exactly. But to me, it doesn't matter how awful a person is if they're suffering. To me, those two don't come into the same word. Sorry, into the same consideration. If I knew about something, would it color my thoughts? Of course, I'm human. But it's just, it's an individual thing, obviously. But yeah, so Roger finds this girl who's dying of her burns. She's almost been burned to death. I mean, almost. As I said, this or some fashion of this does happen in book 6, but it's slightly different. And it's not with the Dutch cabin scene. It was very hard to watch. And every time I got a little bit or a lot of bit emotional with this episode, the first thing that came to my mind was, of course, it's Diana. Of course, it's Diana. And I thought selfishly that Diana did a great job writing this. And I thought Richard did a great job with this scene, a great job. And it killed me as you heard her like going from like trying her labored breathing, right? To when he covered her, when he was smothering her. Murphy's mother, you could hear that slightly change and she couldn't really, She wasn't very strong, but you heard whatever struggle she had in the background. And Richard's face was like, oh, so gutting to watch. And Jamie praying over her and basically praying her into God's arms. I mean, I don't even know how to put that, but like Diana would have Jamie bring out, and I am being very facetious because it was very fitting. It was very fitting for this, but I just thought it was Diana of all people would bring out Jamie's religion in this scene. Goodness. I mean, it was an awful scene. The acting was great, but it was an awful scene. After that, I thought, oh my gosh, where are we going in this episode? You're going to open with that. Holy crap.
I mean, they might as well have left Murta in play for how much I didn't understand what was about to happen.
Murta's back from the dead. Murta's hiding insane. In the love shack.
I was just like, no, that was just Ulysses.
I know. That's what I'm trying to say.
You know, what? I prepped this whole season by reading book 5. And you are screwing with me by throwing a bomb. Now, granted, none of the acts that happened were that foreign for me because I have read the books. But because I was not emotionally and mentally ready for that, I was just like, wait, what? And I felt like the entire episode was like a very prolonged everyone saying goodbye with Bree and Roger, which felt like a last episode of the season kind of thing to do, mm-hmm. as opposed to the second to last episode of the season to do. So I was just like, is this a fake out? Is this a, we're going to try to do this, but something's going to happen at the last minute? And I just legitimately have no idea what happened, because that's not what did happen is not what happened in the book. So I have no clue where they're going with the Bree and Roger storyline right now.
Yeah. So I have, without spoiling, I don't have a guess as like what is going to happen, like what details are going to happen, but I have like an addendum to our conversation about the last episode where we said it made sense to end Bonnet's storyline earlier so that it would free up more space for things in book 6. But what I didn't consider was that getting rid of Bonnet's storyline earlier would allow us to get rid of Roger and Bree.
Yeah, I was like, whoa. Wait,
wow. What? Wow, wow, wow.
It was a lot.
So then we get our intro, and next to last time we're going to hear this song, y'all, at least live. And now for sure, and someone pointed it out, I think, during either the last live after show or in response to our last episode, that, so the only thing as of this episode, we have seen now finally, I think, everything from the intro splices. And because the one with the microscope, of course, was the sperms.
I feel like you're going to say that and somebody's going to be like, oh, but wait, there was this one more.
Well, hey, I am happy to be wrong.
There's only one episode left for them to include.
If we know the content of that episode, they're not going to put anything from that episode into the intro, because it's awful. Okay, after the intro, we get our title card. Now, so I was already, again, not bawling, but I had major tear breaks. I had tears from that opening, that terrible, sad opening. And we go straight to the title card, and I was like, oh my God, it's Faceless Claire in her Voyager outfit. I was like, of course, Diana did this. Diana's going to give us, again, they have to approve the thing, whatever she wants.
Don't say Diana. Diana's not involved in this.
She wrote this episode.
Did she?
Yes.
Because I didn't see that. And if she did, screw her. Why are you bringing this forward?
Oh, okay. Hold on. Just because she wrote it doesn't mean she came up with the storyline of the arc of the season.
Okay.
She's a consultant. She does not make the big decisions. But she was a screenwriter for this episode. The screenwriter.
Well, she did a terrible job, because this is from another book and it didn't belong in this season. And I don't know what she did with Brie and Roger, because this is brutal. I don't understand what just happened.
Okay, so tell me how you thought, what you thought, or whatever, when you, of course, there's this ongoing theme. They get the peanuts. There's an ongoing theme of the peanut butter and jelly. So it was really touching, I thought, to give us Claire in the Voyager outfit.
It took a whole episode for Claire to
procure peanuts, roast them, and then make a sandwich out of them. Yeah. Like, it took a whole episode, which I felt like was a little much. I feel like the minute she was roasting them, she would have immediately made peanut butter sandwiches out of them. I don't know why she would have saved it until, like, the moment before everyone left. That felt weird.
Well, it was I think they tied it into the Bree made the sandwich for her before she left, and that now they have peanuts. They showed us.
Sure, but peanut butter doesn't need to be fermented.
Oh, Summer.
Like, why would you roast them 2 minutes into the episode and then wait to serve it until the last 10 minutes?
It's called drama.
That was weird. It was weird. Come on. Nobody.
Well, also, it was fitting because they kind of bookended it, kind of, with Bree giving her mom a PBJ sandwich before she left her and went through the stones. And Claire is now feeding her daughter and everybody else a PBJ sandwich before they go back through the stones. So it actually makes sense that they ended it.
Look, that's cool. I get that. But I'm saying if she has the ability to make peanut butter before then, she would have already done it. Like, that doesn't, nobody like says, oh, I've got peanuts, I'm going to make peanut butter. After he's like, are you going to give it to the hogs? No, I'm going to make peanut butter. Once he's already established that he thinks peanut butter is for the pigs and for slop, she clearly is trying to win him over as peanut butter is amazing. I'm going to make peanut butter. You're going to love it. You'll see. But then she doesn't make it for like a month later until almost Bree's about to leave. And longer, because she was gone. Like, she gave it to her. And then like 2 weeks later, she's automatically at the stones. Like, so much time passed in this episode.
So what did you think about when you first saw Claire in her Voyager outfit? What did you think?
I mean, we saw Claire in the Voyager outfit. We saw her with the cellophane and we saw her unwrapping the peanut butter sandwich. Like, this is everything that we were supposed to see in season 3. We didn't, and that's okay. And I was like, okay, fine. We're seeing it now. Cool. But I mean, it felt like something that book readers were expecting.
I agree.
Two seasons
ago. I
agree.
It's a little bit out of, I think that the only way. Did we need it? No. Did I love it as a book reader? Oh my gosh, yes. Would it have been more fitting for season 3? Absolutely. Did they make it work? I think so. I know you're not happy or unhappy, whatever, with the way that Claire took too long to make the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. But aside from the time, again, this show and time is not, just ignore it, right? I was just like, oh my gosh, Diana gave us the runaway plastic wrap. Then Claire is shucking peanuts. Is that a thing, or do you just shell them? You shuck peanuts?
Oh, well, no, you don't shuck them. You shell them. You take them out of the shell. They don't have shucks.
So neither does corn. Corn has a husk. You shuck the husk, I think. Shuck the corn. They talk about the PB&J sandwich Bree had made her mother before she left. And while they're chatting, Ian and Wee Jem are playing with that gigantic opal. And Jem says, it's hot. It's hot. And, or warm, whatever he said. And he's a DD, by the way. It's also, Bree's like, what the heck? It's warm to Bree. And then they give it back to Jem and it breaks. Now, this is a first. I know it's, well, with the show or the books, obviously. Now we hear the stones with the gem. That's weird.
That was weird. It felt like what we heard was Otter Tooth stone breaking in half and making the noise. There was nothing else to hear. And then also Ian accused her of being as daft as her son. You're as daft as your child. And I was like, okay. He's like 2. And you can't hear the stones,
can't really say
so
that.
Maybe you need to stop being a douchebag.
That's funny. So as soon as this happens, we hear the stones, or maybe around that time, the Dance of the Druid theme starts up. And then a bunch of riders come up. It's Richard Brown and his Committee of Safety. And they invite Sam to join, and they say, things have been happening.
You can't call yourself the Committee of Safety if you do what you did at the end of the episode. Ever. Ever. Hodgepile was there. At least one of the other Browns was there. And if Hodgepile, who is one of the big, like, the whatever you want to call him, like the big, like, officers of the Committee of Safety and he's present for what they did at the end of the episode, there is no way that these people are a committee for anyone's safety except for their own hide.
As they show up, as the Browns and their Committee of Safety show up, they're having a little conversation and they ask Jamie, like, have you, or whoever comes out and talking to them is like, have you guys seen some bad things going on? And Jamie's like, yeah, there's a burned cabin we think was the Dutch family's cabin. And he's like, yeah, well, we're trying to start this Committee of Safety. Will you join us? And Jamie, to his credit, says, I'll think about it. He just wants to be safe this day.
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, because, you know, you're so busy with your famous whiskey that you can't get away and do other things. And we're like, dude, you didn't want to go when he came with the governor behind him. So you can't be persnickety when he doesn't want to come, when you don't have any kind of real decree behind you. You're just asking for goodwill. As goodwill, join us because we joined you. But, you know, he doesn't feel the same way. But, like, Jamie's been fighting for 20 years, 30 years. Give the man some peace. Let him not fight for a hot second. Because I feel like, with the exception of the 9 months that happened before our eyes in the very beginning of the episode, they've been doing nonstop fighting with everything.
Yes. So, as Summer said, Lionel Brown, Claire notices a wound on Lionel's leg and she's like, come down. Let me fix that for you before it festers and gets worse. And so he hops down and she tends to his wound. We get a few little tidbits that just names. Characters, yes, I remember. I won't say what the association is, but names are safe to say because there's not anything attached to them. It's just names that book readers will remember or maybe recognize. We get a hodgepile.
Not yet.
he's the one in the red coat uniform in the first time they wrote it right up. Yes.
But I'm saying they went in together and she was dealing with this festered wound and she asked how Bonnie was. And he was like, she's well enough. And then Lionel, he's like, I know what you think of me. I know you think I shot Morton. You have to know, understand that you would maybe have done the same thing when your child's honor was at stake. And that was a really strange place to put Claire in because literally in the last two episodes, they were planning to also murder Bonnet because of her daughter's honor. So it was almost the exact same thing, absolutely, but different because Alicia didn't feel dishonored and she ended up with the man who quote unquote dishonored her. It was a different story, but it had to feel the same from a parental point of view.
Yeah, no, I absolutely see that. And the first time through, I didn't make the connection as strongly, but the second time through, I was like, oh yeah, Claire can't really judge him right there. Not too much. Not on this thing.
I mean, even in Claire's face though.
The way he handled it. Well, not even that.
Even if you saw Claire's face, she was just like, awkward. Like it was like that moment of, you're right. I can't speak against how you feel as a parent because we literally just plotted to murder a man for our child's benefit in the last 2 weeks. So it was an interesting juxtaposition for sure.
With the people outside, the Committee of Safety and the people, the Meehans outside, young Ian is there. Someone mentions that or brings up that they had found I don't even think this was about the Dutch cabin. This was about, in general, people doing harm to others. And someone said, oh, it's probably the Indians. Young Ian is there to defend the Native Americans.
Whatever you want to call them, that's what they called them in the episodes, but not all savages are the problem. And it was Ian versus Hodgepile in that moment. And I even forgot the Hodgepile was a thing until they reintroduced him.
And he said, Native Americans aren't the only ones who scalp. I don't know. So when young Ian was talking, was there defending the Native Americans, was he talking to someone in a red coat uniform or someone with long hair? Long, black, wavy hair.
Red coat uniform.
That's what I thought. Okay. I realized way too late. And it was like 12 minutes and 20 seconds into it, at least into our show that we get, because I remembered the time I had to go back to it. So I was like, oh my God. Oh my gosh. I went back to look at the end credits to make sure I was not wrong or to see that I was right or not wrong. Like I do that a lot. You can agree with me or agree or not disagree. I can be right or I can be not wrong. And And it was confirmed. The guy with the long kind of wavy hair who had like a Native American look to him, who was with the Committee of Safety, was Wendigo Donner. Richard Brown says, oh, your whiskey's still, and this is about, well, no, he hasn't. They haven't said no. Jamie has said at this point, you know, let me think on it. Richard Brown says, oh, your whiskey still must be needing constant watch then.
Your famous whiskey still. Right. Which, you know, could be a nod to the fact that it had its, you know, almost debut last episode where they were moving whiskey, quote unquote, moving whiskey, but not. And what I had is that Brown was pushing really hard for Jamie to repay the militia service. So everything that the Browns did, all of the Browns did for the militia service that was required of Jamie to drum up with his service to the crown, Richard is pushing really hard for Jamie to repay on his behalf. And Jamie was like, what I have is, he was like, I'll consider it. I'll consider it. That's his way of saying, talk to me later. I'm not ready. I can't commit.
Roger and Bree had agreed that as soon as they knew that Jamie could travel, if he could, that they would start making plans to go back. And I'm rehashing that from, you know, I guess last season or maybe earlier this season.
That was a really aggressive stance. Like the moment that the Opal thing happened and they realized he could hear the stones, it went from, oh, I guess he can hear it, to by the end of the month. Within a month, we're going to go. I mean, that was a really sudden like state of departure. Like the whole point of them being like, great, he can hear them. They weren't even 100% sure he could hear them. Like, he's two. He could lie. I mean, or make it up or not understand what they're asking him. I mean, there's lots of other things. It seemed like a really abrupt change for them to go from, we live here, this is where we live now, to, oh, he can hear the stones, or we're going in a month.
Young Ian brings it to everyone's notice that we need to talk about this. Yo, the Opal, what up? And then he goes into Ottertooth, which was missing from, well, was needed. Actually, that is from book five. So that is, Summer should be familiar with that.
But wasn't, but didn't, but to be honest, wasn't Ottertooth with a different tribe in the book?
I think it was. No, he was with the Mohawk. That's what.
Wasn't it the Cherokee? Wasn't it the Cherokee versus the Mohawk? Like, I thought that, I didn't feel that they weren't from the same tribe, weren't they? I could be wrong. I'm not. Look, listeners, I promise you, I don't know all the things, but I felt like they were two different tribes. I could be wrong, and I'm okay to be wrong. But where was the gray-haired lady with the thing in her pouch? Wasn't she Tuscaroran?
Nyawene.
Yeah. She was not Mohawk. She was Tuscaroran, was she not?
Yes, she was local.
Right. And they interacted with Ottertooth, which was the Tuscarorans, not the Mohawk. So for Ian to have information about Ottertooth was weird.
I don't think the Tuscarorans interacted with him.
They didn't, but in the show it was the Cherokee. They made them the Cherokee. Nyawene was the Cherokee.
Okay, so you're not saying books, you're saying show only. In the books, it was Nyawene who saw Claire.
To be fair, I'm saying both. But what I'm saying is the Mohawk were completely different, meaning that Ottertooth interacted with a different tribe than Ian went to live with.
We have to keep things separate, okay? So let's do books first. In the book, yes, when they get there and they meet Nyawene, Nakaginawedo, all those people, and they say, oh, Claire, you're going to come into your full power when you have, you know, gray hair, white hair, all these things. There's a vision. Take my amulet. And she gets killed by Hamula, who thinks that they pass on the sickness, which killed his family. And he scalps her and someone else. Who knows? Other people. So yes, that was completely Tuscaroran. Had no, that we know of, no talk of, and that's the book. Okay, so that goes away. However, the reason I think, and I haven't gotten to the show yet, but the reason I think you might be, and I might be, like, combining these two or bringing them a little closer is because Ottertooth, whatever his personal background was, I don't know what his personal, you know, lineage was, as far as Native American lineage or tribe or whatever. But he was with, at least in the book, he was with the Mohawk. That is how Ian got his book. The reason, or the way that Claire ran, quote unquote, ran into Otter Tooth, found the opal and his skull, was because when Otter Tooth was killed, they took the head, and he was the person who took the head, was told to take it far away and bury it. And it just happened to be where Claire interacted with him under whatever she fell in or stayed in. So he is not really in the books. He's not related to, or Otter Tooth is not related to the Tuscarora or the new Cherokee, whatever. In the show, yes, Tuscarora became Cherokee. And I still think that it's separate, unless, and prove me wrong. And I'm not, this is not a challenge. I really, truly prove me wrong, because I might be wrong here. Same thing. Claire finds Otter Tooth's skull and the opal, right? And she has the opal,
but then she knew about it. Nakondawehi, whatever her name was, knew about the opal. Yeah, she knew about it.
I don't know that she knew about the opal. I think she saw it, and there, from what I remember, she didn't know about Otter Tooth, but she had her tribe or her people her people in general had, what's the word? Superstitions about such stones. Now, what we're also not considering is, since that was a stone that Otter Tooth traveled with, is that right?
Yes.
So if he brought it with him, it doesn't matter where it came from, because we're never told. In that case, it could have been absolutely, well, that would make even less sense. Well, no, because this is the time travel thing. So if he leaves 1968 or whatever year, 60s, 40s, whatever. Whatever he lit, Otter Tooth, Robert, someone, when he leaves the 20th century and goes back, he has it with him. We don't know how he got in the 20th century. It could have been with the Mohawk. It could have been with the Cherokee or the Tuscarora. We don't know. So when he goes back, the people may not have seen the exact one, because he just brought it with him and we don't know where he got it from. It could be that there is general superstition with opals or with certain, you know, gemstones. We don't know. So, but yeah, I think it's a little less clear in the books than it is, sorry, in the show than it is in the books. But yeah, that's a whole, oh my God, that's a whole other thing. But yeah, it gets that, TT gets sticky. TT gets really sticky. So Ian brings up Otter Tooth's ghost and like double checks. Yeah, Ante, you saw him, right?
Yep.
A lot of TT stuff. He points out all the odd things about Claire, appearing out of nowhere after 20 years, the medicine, the way she speaks, etc. And then Roger and Bree. And he finally brings out Otter Tooth's journal. It's in Latin. And Jamie's like translating a little bit of it or interpreting it. That's really weird.
Okay, I'm going to pause you for 1 second. I Googled into the Outlander series book for the first 7 books, the Outlander series. Nyawenis, woodpecker feathers, blah, 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 blah. That whole situation happened right before the whole conversation about Otter Tooth. Claire says, yes, the Tuscarora call me the White Raven, which means that whole conversation happened with the Mohawk. And I was, once again, wrong.
Oh, okay. So you were wondering earlier if it happened with the Tuscaroran, and now you're saying you found out it happened with the Mohawk. Okay, I got it. It was hard to follow that. Okay, got it.
Yes, that's all I was saying. The Otter Tooth conversation happened with the Mohawk. And the fact that she referenced the Tuscaroran while she had the conversation means that it definitely happened with the Mohawk.
Yeah. So Jamie is reading a little bit from, or in the English. Of course, he's translating it. And he says a few things. And one of the things he translates is, I am too late, he wrote. So, and this is from book 4. And book 4 and 5. So this is, Summer may not remember this, but this is not a spoiler for true. And they don't go into a lot of, because they shoved so much stuff in this episode. They don't go into a lot of what he wrote, but he left at a certain point with a certain goal.
No, but this whole conversation should have had Bree and Roger present. It would have been real easy to just have them there.
Girl, yes, 100% agreed. Agreed. So Otter Tooth aimed, he says, I'm too late. And what that means is he is saying that he had meant to come earlier to have a bigger impact on saving more or some, having an impact on the balance between the Native Americans and the colonists, right? He wanted to help things earlier.
Yeah, he had to get there. Yeah. He had to get there before the colonists, for sure.
And then Claire points out that it was written by with a ballpoint pen. And the viewer sees, hears, watches that it's time, y'all. It is time to let the TT out. I come from another time, from the future. And bam. And the best, I love Ian's reaction. I knew you were a fairy, auntie.
Exactly. I knew you were a fairy.
I love Ian.
Well, she said the magic words, 200 years.
Yes, that's true. And all three of them, yes, it's Claire, Roger, and Bree. And yes, Myrta knew, they say. And then the scene closes with them basically like, let's get drunk and get down to business. We got to like air all of our shiznit now. And Jamie closes the doors to keep in the secrets. And then we're kept out of that conversation any further. Later on, Jamie and Claire are out and about, and they go to the Love Shack where we have Ulysses. We learn that Ulysses was freed right after Hector Cameron had died. Huh.
It was witnessed by Forbes. That was a lot.
Oh, yes.
It was hysterical. That was, come on.
Crazy, crazy irony. Yeah, it was awesome. And they bring him food. So Jamie and Claire went down to bring him some food and a book for the boredom. And so we find out. Well, that's all we find. I mean, we're wrapping this up or, you know, condensing it, obviously. In the first cabin, Roger and Bree chat about the opals and TT. And although they don't use my language, she basically says, maybe Jem's a super TT. Maybe because he has two time travel parents, that he's a super TT, basically. And maybe that's why the opal reacted so strongly to him. And it's also possible proof that he's the bio dad. So they're basically like, let's hurry, or hurry within a month or whatever. Let's make up our backstories before we go poof. And Roger has an idea that we'll go up north, and Bree agrees Boston is probably best. And he can say he got a job as a university professor, which is actually not, I mean, it's technically a lie, but it is what he would plan to do when they go back forward. And they plan to leave within a month. And we hear a little bit of their theme. It's still the best theme. But girl, a month? I was like, holy dang boodle. This is like, they're getting them out of Dodge. They're Russian.
They're Slavic. They're Russian.
Stop it. They're rushing. Stop it.
I know.
No, there were no Russians.
No,
there
like
were no Russians last week. We missed the Russians.
I felt it was a rushed. It felt really rushed. Quote unquote, knowing that you can travel and planning to travel seems really rushed, real rushed.
So in the big house, Lizzie tells Jamie, you have a visitor, sir, and it's Lord John. And he brings news. And so he takes him up. He's like, okay, stay for a while. He takes him up to the guest room. He's like, guest room? Like, yeah, we finally finished the second story. Not in time for the bison, but in time for Lord John. They're along the river. They're roasting the peanuts. Young Ian and Bree chat about the coming war.
How far into the episode are we? How far into the episode are we that they're just now roasting the peanuts from the beginning of the episode? Don't you think that's a long time to wait? Don't you think peanuts are perishable?
I mean, eventually, yeah, they'll spoil, but not in 2 weeks, I don't think.
Well, I could Google that, but I just feel like there's a chance that things are going to get moldy.
Oh my gosh, your concern for these peanuts is kind of ridiculous.
Look, all I'm saying is that you can't start the episode with procuring the peanuts and then wait weeks to actually roast the peanuts and then wait more weeks, almost the end of the month, before she actually makes peanut butter sandwiches. Come on!
Okay. So, well, once you make peanut butter, it'll keep for hella long. So
yeah, but no one waits 3 weeks to a month before they say, hey, you've never tried this. It's awesome. Taste it. Nobody waits a month.
We don't know them.
Nobody waits a month.
They got a lot of stuff going on.
No, nobody waits a month.
In the 18th century, they had time.
I promise you, if I came up with a really cool thing And I, from my, where I came from, like if I was visiting another country and I was like,
where you came from.
And I would, I'm like,
you're
my
next door neighbor.
This is my cultural dish of where I come from. And I have the things to make it now. And I start doing all the things to make it. The minute it's ready to go, I'm going to be like, oh my God, try it. It's ready. I'm not going to sit on it for 3 weeks and be like, okay, well, now that Bree's leaving, I'm going to give you a journey cake, peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
While they are doing something with the nuts, young Ian and Bree chat about the coming war. And basically, it comes down to what can you change if not a war? Maybe it's small things, right, Auntie? And take me back. And then he's like, so take me back to my wife, please. And she's like, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. And then he huffs off. Goes off in a huff.
I felt so bad for Ian in this episode. He wants so badly to be able to do what they do, which is to travel and to fix the thing that's what he sees as broken, right? So we don't even know as viewers yet, viewers, not readers, why he's so upset.
Yeah.
But and what he wants to go and fix. But we just know that he wants to be able to do what they do and to go back in time and fix something. And the sadness that he can't do it just by virtue of biology is awful for them because he's taking it personally. And they're like, they can't make him be able to travel. I feel bad for everybody.
So then we are back to the big house. Lord John and Jamie are having a chat, and he says that he has to return to Hellwater. And that's why he came to see Jamie first. He's like, look, I got to leave this place. Lord Dunsany has died. Willie needs to know how to run the estate and all these things. He needs to be the Earl he was born to be. And it is my duty to help him through this to learn these things. And Jamie asks, will you ever return to the VA? And he's like, well, surely. Let's never say never. I can't believe I wouldn't be back. And he also mentions the feelings that another thing that it's, this is not a spoiler, I don't think. It ain't yet. I mean, I don't know what's gonna happen. Knowing what they're doing, who knows what's gonna happen. But the war is not in book six, not the war. But everyone is starting to feel it. And that was definitely a feeling in book five and a little bit stronger in book six.
To be fair, it's in every book from here on out. Every book from here on out is like the eve of the revolution. Like everything smells of revolution.
And as a parting gift, he gives, Lord John gives Jamie a wee portrait of Willie. And as he takes it out of the bag, Willie's theme plays. And then it's bedtime with Jamie and Claire. They chat how Bree has said she would draw some portraits for them all before she leaves. And Claire, as she's getting ready, puts on her special scent that tells Jamie she wants some. And he's fallen asleep. And later, waking up warm with the hot flashes, she gets up, goes to the window, opens it to get fresh air, cool air, and he awakes. And they do the famous window scene.
I know, but the conversation itself was so funny. When he was like sniffing her and like saying all of the different notes he smells, and then she's like, and the faintest whiff of manure, it's very manly. And I was like, ew. And then
that's what I meant is so much Diana.
Yeah. But then he leans her back over the window and I'm like, he better hope she doesn't fall. That would have been bad for everyone.
And it's so much Diana naming all the ingredients of their dinner from their dinner as they kiss, because that's what Diana does in many of her love scenes in the book. She has a lot of like, oh, I tasted the onion from last night. The next morning, we get the show version of Sperms.
Here's our last opening credit scene.
I'm happy we got it. Don't get me wrong. I think it was sweet. And anything they include from the book, from the right book, is always welcome, is amazing. I was only surprised, not upset, just surprised at his lack of reaction. He wasn't like mortified or horrified. And that's what makes it so funny. Like having a scene just from the book, just to have it in the book, but not playing up the reason it's in the book is, you know what I'm saying? It's like they had it in there. Just it's like they were checking a box almost, even though I enjoyed it with him not being horrified at her doing this or showing him this or that that she did what she did.
He was really just more surprised.
Yeah, of course he was surprised. But I think the language, the lines were very close.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the scene we wanted would have taken way more time than they had time to give us.
Maybe. Well, and we also, well, yeah. And we also don't know, they could have done it.
And they could have deleted it, yep.
Exactly, to them just kissing and making up or whatever. So as Bree is snacking, Jamie comes in and tells her, yo, you have a bro. And when you're in the future, be sure to look him up. He's an Earl, yo. He should be easy to find.
Worse than that, Bree realizes that she was almost her brother's stepmother. It would have been amazing.
Oh, Lord.
How awkward would that have been?
That's funny. And then we hear Willie's theme again.
And now we've got 3 weeks have passed. They're leaving in a week.
Only on the second watching did I hear and then look for and see Adso in the window seat. Did you even see him there?
Yes. He meowed.
I always miss him when it's just exactly, but I didn't look over. I heard the brrr or whatever and I looked over like, oh, it's a cat. It's a cat. It is a cat. It's Adso.
He just meowed in the background. That's all they do. He doesn't get a real characterization. He's just the rando gray cat in the background.
Which is fine. It's important that he's there. And that's all for readers. Show watchers, I mean, if they like a cat, great. But that's for readers. Because I don't think we really need Adso. I mean, Adso doesn't really serve a purpose. I mean, Rollo did at one point, but he doesn't anymore. In the book, he does.
Adso was a bigger troublemaker. Oh. Like, he spilled stuff and made a mess.
Oh, That's true. So Jamie says, even though I may never see any of you again, you have made my life whole. It was very sweet. And so in this conversation, he shows her the portrait, right?
Yeah, he gives her the Willie portrait.
He gives it to her or shows it to her?
I mean like gives it to her to keep? It's or just, in the bag and he hands it. And what's crazy about that is that prior to him handing it to her in the bag, it was on the nightstand next to his bed. So, I mean, it was weird that he put it back in the bag before he handed it to her. Like, I want you to open this like a present. But it's the worst present ever because I'm going to tell you that I screwed around on your mom who I thought was dead. And,
oh, gosh.
And I didn't love her, but I had sex with her anyway.
Hold the presses in the forest or, again, into the woods. Roger and Bree and Marsley and Fergs have a discussion about how they're going to leave, and we find out Marsley is pregnant again. Book readers are not surprised. So now we know whom she is carrying. Sweetest bebe ever. And Roger and Bree tell Marsley and Fergs that they are leaving. They got jobs. They got to go. When Bree comes, and they come back, and the next scene, they're at the big house, or Bree's at the big house, and she's saying goodbye to some people, and then she's coming in up the steps. Before she meets Lizzie, we hear it's a clarinet. Again, whenever I hear clarinet and there's Bree, I think Frank. Or clarinet in general, I think Frank. And then I look around for reasons to potentially be Frank. Here, I mean, there's a Bree connection, so who knows. But it was not his theme. Then Lizzie and Bree chat. And it's kind of funny until it gets not funny and it gets a little bit sad. But Lizzie has to be told that she's not welcome to go with him. That was hard. That was kind of mean. But, I mean, we know why, but still. Poor Lizzie. What did you think about Lizzie?
I mean, that was quite a jump to just kind of assume that you were going. I mean,
I don't think it was. She was their basic. She was her bondservant, and she had saved her, and she was supposed to work for her. They haven't brought her dad in. That's not a spoiler. That was supposed to happen in book four or early book five. So the fact that her father's not there, she doesn't really have a link there. Brianna is her link, and Jem is her purpose right now. But yes, it makes sense that I never thought that Lizzie would ever want to go with her. I never thought that. But again, the reason I thought that, never thought that, was because it's completely different in the books and there was no purpose for that. Later on, the Browns are back. Richard Brown wants his answer. Jamie's like, okay, I thought it over very carefully and I am honored by your question, by your offer, but I say no thank you. Lionel has also brought his wife, whom he injured.
His abused wife.
Yes. Claire, of course, will tend her injury. They get her inside. And Mrs. Brown, they're talking about, well, how did this happen? Did he hurt you? Da, da, da. And she's like, well, I wouldn't lie with him, or I don't want whatever. He wants a baby and I wouldn't lie with him or something like that. And Mrs. Brown quotes Dr. Rawlings about what women can do to not get with child. Oopsie. Rah, rah. So when Lionel comes in to, yep, when Lionel comes in to oversee the healing, meaning what she's doing, how she's handling his wife, he notices the name on the medicine box, Dr. Rawlings. Big fat sigh, Claire, you're about to have a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. And then they leave. So then we're with Roger and Ian. And Roger asks Ian if he will accompany them to the stones. Brianna does not want her parents there. She thinks that if they go, she won't have the strength to leave. So since they did not, and this is so weird. I don't know a reason for. I truly don't know a reason for, because it makes it that much more difficult for future stuff. And it makes this thing just more awkward. Okay, period. I don't know why they didn't show/find the stones on Ocracoke. Because then they wouldn't have had to go journey 2 weeks to get to the stones that Roger had found on the way to the Mohawk.
Yeah, well, village. They didn't find new stones. They didn't want to take the time to do that. So they had to go back to the stones that he knew.
I agree. I just think making a 2-week jaunt makes it a lot more time. Or the benefit of that, I guess, would be that since it is so far, because if it were Ocracoke, Jamie and Claire still could have said, I don't want them to come. I mean, it doesn't matter, I guess, how far away it is. But being on that far of a journey, it's a much more strenuous and potentially dangerous thing compared to, like, I guess, going to Wilmington or Ocracoke, whatever. Okay, so Ian says, yes, he will.
He'll be the getaway driver.
Yes. And he's like, yeah, because we need someone to bring the horses and the carriage
exactly.
back. So since, and I already said part of this, but since they didn't show us stones on Ocracoke, they're going back. I was wrong. They're not going back to New York because they weren't in New York or the New York area where the Mohawk village was. It was on the way to the Mohawk village. So we don't know, you know, if it took like 3 months to get there, then obviously the 2 weeks means they're a lot closer to Fraser's Ridge than they are to the Mohawk village. But Roger gives Ian his land grant. Ian's like, I don't want that. And he's like, fine, just look after it for me then. And then Lord John and Bree have a sweet little scene. And I see you, Willie. He says, yeah, I can never tell him about you. And then perhaps someday, ... And then he tells us, we find out that his new manservant will be Ulysses. And even though he's technically free right now, it's too dangerous in this environment. Once he sets foot on a British ship with me, he will be absolutely free. He'll be a free man. And then it's time to say goodbye to Bree and Claire, for them to say goodbye to each other. And that night they sit down to the Last Supper. Before dinner, the future's answer to journey cake, peanut butter and jelly. And as they are cutting it and eating it, Jamie eats it with his fork and knife.
That was funny. I enjoyed that because
it was very funny.
We know how much Sam likes peanut butter. So him dissing on the PB was hysterical for me because I was like, his favorite cookies are peanut butter cookies.
Oh my God.
He loves the PB.
And the song that's playing is Loch Lomond. I don't have the whole thing memorized. I could probably drum up some more of the lines, but one of the lines is, me and my true love will never meet again on the bonny, bonny banks of Loch Lomond. So it's a very sad song, but very apropos of this, you know, event, their last time eating together. And then it's the bye-bye day. We get the TT theme as the Wee family leaves for I put New York, but again, I'm wrong, at least for the Stones.
I'm still mad about this.
Girl, oh, yes, I want to hear, blast it in a second. This is what I want. Okay, hold on. This is what I want to see. And I know people disagree, and I get it, but this is, maybe it's the book lover in me. I don't know. We don't need, I guess, so much detail but for everything. I get it. But before, I want to, this is what, if I had my way, okay? Every time someone, because it is rare. It's rare. It does not happen more than once a season. Well, last season, I guess season 4 was twice. My point is, it doesn't happen more than once or twice a season. And some seasons, no, it happens at least once every season. Anyway, we don't see it very often. But this is what I want to see for every trip through the Stones. The before and the after. Not an hour of after. Just the prep and then what happens afterwards with the waking up and as they walk off into so-and-so. We got a little bit with Brianna. We didn't get diddle squirt from Claire in Voyager. That's fine. We got a, so we do get a little bit of it, but I loved the fact that they were at the Stones a little bit longer. So anyway, that's what I loved. So that's all we see. This is all we see right now.
I really wanted this to be a misdirection, and it still might be. I don't know where they end up.
Yeah. After we see a little bit of the prep of them getting down off the cart and getting ready to go to the Stones, we're taken back to Roger and Bree's cabin, the first cabin on the ridge, and Claire is looking at drawings of Jem. And through their dialogue, they're like, oh, I miss him. It's like they were just gone, da-da-da-da. Through their dialogue, we learn it's just been 2 weeks, so which matches the fact that they're at the Stones. So that makes sense. And she's like, it was just us before, and it's just us again. Okay, back at the Stones. I think that little Jem is so sweet. I love that little boy. And when they get to the Stones, they say goodbye to Ian, and they're off. And every time I see a TT trip, I get huge, huge tear pricks. And once they go, seeing Ian's reaction was even brought me a tear prick. That was hard.
I don't like it.
I know. Me either. What we don't normally see is the return trip or after someone gets through.
Does this mean that they're just not going to have Roger and Bree have the other that they were supposed to have, which was the whole reason they went to the future in the first place? Like, I'm mad about it. I'm mad about it because they have made Bree and Roger cowards. Bree and Roger were not afraid to face what had to come with the upcoming Revolutionary War, with all of those other things that may or may not come to pass. They were not afraid of those things because they were all together. The only reason they left to go to the future was because their had a that could not. This is important. I know you don't want to say that, but I'm upset because they've shoved this whole storyline forward in a way that is unsatisfactory and is not serving the characters again.
I don't disagree with you. Once they've gone through and they wake up or come to, and Jem is up quickly and runs off, and Roger and Bree see something. What the heck is it? The last thing that we hear is Roger saying, "What the devil?" If they take their storyline too far off the rails, I wrote facepalm. And I know you think they already have, but what I am saying is they could still do the thing, acquire the thing that they had before they went back in the books. They could still acquire that thing. Then they wouldn't need the problem that meant that sent them back. Fair enough.
Unless they came up and said, "What the devil?" and realized they were right back where they started 20 minutes after they left Ian, there's no way they can redeem what they've done with Bree and Roger at all. There are too many book-worthy things that needed to happen that aren't going to get to happen if they shove them to the future or into the future in some way that they are not back in the past with Claire and Jamie. There's just not. It's not going to work. It'll be different. It won't be the book. And if it's not the book, okay. I have lots of people who don't read and still enjoy the series and think that I was talking to someone last week who was like, "The last two episodes have been awesome." And I was like, "Yeah, the last episode is not even remotely from the book. I'm glad you enjoyed it." Like, I'm like, none of those things happened. But I like hearing that people who haven't read the book still enjoy it for what it is. I get it. I 100% get it. But for those of us who have read the book, and I'm like, to be fair, I didn't even dislike last week's episode. I'm glad they finished Bonnet. I'm glad he's done. I'm glad they moved that forward and made it done. I don't think the kidnapping was super necessary. I think they could have done all the things without that and stayed closer to the books. But again, I'm not a writer on the show, and I don't understand because I don't know.
The kidnapping of Brianna?
Brianna being kidnapped last week by Bonnet. That wasn't necessary.
Well, it was part of, it happened
but
in book
But it didn't six. Happen
but
at the Myrtles.
But not, and not in that
so,
way. Correct. No, it didn't. You're right. It didn't.
All of those, I'm just saying, it's like, it fits and I can make it work, but it wasn't necessary. But I can see that it allowed Bonnet to vomit forth his backstory in a way that we can all feel a little bit for him in the way of a lost episode before we killed him. Cool. I get it.
The feeling, when you and I talked last week, regardless of what other people thought, what you and I thought about, like, you know, whoa, that's like, that's abrupt, like bringing, ending Bonnet's storyline, an entire book early, right? That was very jolting. But if I remember correctly, you and I were pretty hopeful about what that would open up room for in book six. You and I, last episode, were talking about how it could be a wonderful thing as far as, because book six is so freaking full of stuff, right? It could be a wonderful thing
to make that story. I'm like, I get bringing stuff forward. I know I get bringing stuff forward, but I feel like jumping things to almost the end of the next book forward is a lot.
You and I were so hopeful about what this might be able to do for season six, right? It gets an entire storyline out, and it gives more room to the stuff that they could actually do. That's amazing. That was like, you know, I could totally see this, and this may have been like one of the best things they've done as far as being able to accomplish more in a shorter season, because we don't have 16 or 13 episodes anymore. That's how why I was so hopeful, and we talked about that. So this time, and I'm going along with what you're saying, by them, I'm not even talking about how they change the character. I'm not disagreeing, but I'm not even saying that. I'm just saying by them sending Roger and Bree back, number one, an entire book, this should be happening at the end of season six, period, full stop. Okay. That's where it should have happened. But, or some point in season six. However, by them doing that right now, for the complete, I won't say the wrong reason, but for a completely different reason, robs viewers of a very important storyline already. I didn't even think that them doing this would reflected the writers making or producers, whomever, making the characters weaker. But I see that now as you say that. It's very, and that's not of, oh, it doesn't match the books and I'm being a piss poor sport here. No, because it, I absolutely see what you're saying. And so what I'm trying to get at is after the hopefulness that I felt, and I think you felt last week about looking for possibilities of what could actually be covered next season in perhaps one of the most dense books, in the longest book. Now I'm very flummoxed.
The thing is, it could still be awesome, but knowing the way that they're leading us to believe they've cut and what they've cut, like an entire storyline for two characters, an entire storyline, because they had an entire life in A Breath of Snow and Ashes, Bree and Roger did, that didn't include them going back in the future. I'm just saying they had a life in A Breath of Snow and Ashes that it looks like, and I could be wrong. We'll have to see what happens next week. It could be a misdirection. It could be many things. But the way that it's being played off right now is that they have written off their entire Breath of Snow and Ashes lifestyle. And if they have, that's a shame. That's a big shame. Because I know I already stated it and you're going to cut it out, but the reason they went back was completely different and much less cowardly than it's not safe here. Just be fair. They're going to get back forward and it's not going to be safe there either. So picking a time based upon what your perceived safety is dumb. And those characters were willing to stay with family because that's where they felt they belonged, with family. And the only reason they left was a medical issue that could not be solved in the past. That's it.
I am wondering, because I didn't think about this. I did not. It did not enter my mind. I just like, oh my gosh, the Stones are going back hella early. Like, when are we going to see them again? Because if we see them at all in season six, they've effed up season six. And I'm not saying the season won't be good. I'm saying it is no longer following book six. You know what I'm getting at? Because in order to see them, they'd have to bring book seven forward. And that's like a whole bunch of like, holy crap.
That's it. I mean, that's all you can do, because they've literally pushed them forward almost an entire book. They have to keep them a book forward, which only could mean that they're planning on shoving them all the way back by seven and pushing them back early, or they aren't really gone forward and they screwed up their travel. So we'll see what happens next week. We'll see.
So back on the ridge, it's Fergus and Jamie and some other dudes, I think, because Ian's not there, right? Ian's with
It was the Beardsleys. It was one of the Beardsleys.
Okay, so some dudes are working. Are they like in the garden?
Manure.
Oh, manure. Okay.
They're working turds.
Okay, so they're working turds. And there's an explosion. It's like, oh, it's the Stillhouse. So it's like the faint of all faints. Come on. They do it. It's like military strategic planning. They're not thinking. Yeah, obviously they have to attend to it, but you don't leave your flank exposed, basically, or your groin. So anyway, when they hear it and they look up and they're like, oh my gosh, it's the thing. We need to go look. And they all run. Right when we got a look at what the men were wearing, they need to put César Dombois in like less clothing. And I don't mean like naked. I just mean what he was wearing. His hair was back. You saw his neck. He didn't have a hat on. I love him in a hat, by the way. That's not saying the hat's not that high. He and Jamie both wear the tricorn very well. But he's wearing a kind of bluish greenish shirt, if I'm not mistaken. It's open at the neck. There's nothing around his neck. It's like open at the collar, I should say. He looks so good with a little bit more relaxed clothing on. He was hot as hell. So we need Fergus to wear more open collars. And then, boom, the still explodes.
No, Ginger, he just needs more lines. He just needs more lines. It doesn't matter what he's wearing. He just needs a chance to have a scene.
He needs more lines, period. That's always without saying. But he looks redonk here. He looks amazing. And then Jamie and the men leave. And Claire is going to stay because her patience. And she's doing, when we go see her, she's doing the first thing we ever saw her do. It was relocating a dislocated shoulder.
She's real good at that.
Yes, she is. Men come in and stab the male patient, attack the women, and Marsley is knocked out. But before they got to her, she had thankfully told Germain to hide under this bed or under the surgical bed or whatever, the patient bed. And Claire is abducted. Thought it was really weird that they put a bag or something over her head. So they're off with her. And then as the men return from the still, all is not well. Wee Germain is waiting out in front when Fergs et al. Come back.
Germain, what are you doing out here by yourself? Why are you just, you know, outside by yourself? You don't hang out by yourself. The bad men took Grandmama.
Well, he says, Mama or Maman won't wake up. And the mad men took Grandmama. Pooh.
I felt bad. She's gone. For Germain.
Me too. And Jamie runs in. He checks. He's like, Claire, Claire. And he goes and he takes a torch. And he's running and running and running and running and running. And he goes and lights the fiery cross. It is on. Get ready for the kill them all, y'all. Their love theme over his running with the torch is another huge tear prick for me. So I know it was a lot of stuff for book readers. I mean, meaning there's a lot of stuff from the books in this. And a lot of stuff from several books in this. I wouldn't expect any different from Diana. And by that, I don't mean all the smushing together, but I mean having great stuff from the books, having great lines and that kind of thing. But wow, it was a little jarring as a book reader. And this is one of the times I kind of wish that I didn't know what was going to happen. You know what I mean?
Hadn't read the books, maybe. I'm super jealous of, like I said, the person I've been talking to. Who's purposefully not read the books because she was burned by Game of Thrones. And I'm like, but I mean, like, I just have all the feelings. And I feel this particular episode was very difficult to not be incensed about. Incensed.
I have never hoped, even though I think it's a low blow, I have never, ever, ever hoped like I hope right now. That it's a misdirect.
I mean,
I almost feel like it has to be at this point, right? With that, what the devil? What else would it be? And again, it was the reason they traveled, which was my issue with what they've done. So we'll see. I don't know. We'll have to. I am willing to go on the journey the writers are taking me on. I'm reluctant and I'm a little bit disgruntled, but I'm willing to go.
Here's my fear. Even beyond whichever way they go, my fear is episode 12 is going to be all about Claire, which it should be. And we're not going to see anything from them until season 6.
I know. I just feel like the way that they formulated this episode felt like a season finale. It had all the cliffhangers and it just felt like that's, you know, a place to make us uncomfortable to leave us for 6 to 12 months. So,
a year and a half.
Who knows? Or longer. Who knows how long COVID's going to keep us from our episodes. But, you know, I don't know. I'm willing to be on the journey the writers are taking me on. I'm willing. I'm just a little, I just have a lot of feelings about structure. And I know I don't know where they're going with the choices they've made. I just know that there was a specific structure to the books.
And the fear is, Summer, and I am there with you. The fear is if they went through and made it, they really effed with the book. And we're going to get like 2 books next season. If they didn't make it through, that also is a problem. Like they both are problems.
But I feel like they've shat on Roger and Bree and that whole relationship enough over the last 2 to 3 years that making them weaker as characters and more cowardly, which is how this decision to move or to leave makes them, in my opinion. I mean, I just feel like it's a disservice to the characters. And if Diana Gabaldon really wrote that episode, and I'm sorry that I didn't see it in the credits, that makes me a little bit more upset. I'll have to see where it goes next week to see how this may or may not resolve.
I just thought of something that if it was a misdirect, there may be something that completely falls within the storyline. It doesn't break Diana's universe that could explain if they didn't travel. And that is, yes, they had stones, but in the book, at least, because they did not do this in the show. In the book, in season 4, when Roger goes back, it takes him, I think, two tries, because he tries to go through and then he comes to. The reason there is one out if they took it. And at least, again, in my limited mind, because I'm not them. I don't know what they would have thought. My guess is if it's not a true travel, they did travel because something happened, right? They went through and ended up somewhere. My guess is, and we don't know how long this takes. I mean, it was obviously not seconds because we saw Ian go straight up to the stones, but it could have been minutes, maybe, you know, 2 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever. The one thing that if they do this would not break or change Diana's time travel universe rules, and that is the gems help protect you. They don't necessarily, they might be able to direct you, but they're mostly for protection that we know of thus far, rather than direction, even though they apparently can do that, but we don't know much about that. One of the things that helps direct you that they do know, and they haven't played it up too much, but that absolutely do in the book, is thinking of a person and that thinking of someone that you're going to. And that is something that was one of the reasons, at least in the book, and I think a little bit, I don't know if they did a really good job with it in the show, in the book, that was one of the reasons why Brianna was so upset that Roger came after her, because she was afraid she wouldn't be able to go back, because he was like he was her anchor, right? He was going to be able to direct her to that time. So my guess is, even though they were all together, if they pop back and see Ian, it was because, even if they did it on purpose, because they didn't talk about it, right? They didn't say, think about, because Jem couldn't do diddle. Jem didn't have any connection to the 20th century. Roger and Bree would have had to do all of it. So, and they didn't have any discussion about that. So my guess is the show's not playing it up, but maybe after now they will, who knows. But if it was a misdirect and if they traveled and came back real quick, relatively quickly, and they're still there, my guess is it's because they were thinking of family and missing family. So it brought them right back. Because that has happened in the book to Roger when he was going to get Bree.
We'll see. I'm done speculating.
Would that upset you?
I'm not going to speculate on what else will upset me. I'm waiting to see what next week brings.
You're like, I'm just waiting to be upset. Either way.
I literally couldn't be that much more upset than I am right now because I've worked myself up into a frenzy.
Yeah, for you, this is really something because you, I mean, I know I'm a dramatic, passionate, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you're passionate. We're both passionate. Mine is more, I wouldn't say surface. Mine is more, I think mine comes out more easily or I express it more readily. Yours is more, but more, you're just not as expressive as I am as far as like, you know, the ups and the downs and the tear pricks and the whatever, right?
Well, here's the thing. I try really hard to be on the journey that's being presented to me. But they have shat on Roger and Bree for the last 2 years in irrevocable ways, in ways that hurt my feelings and in ways that are like a disservice to the actors. I feel bad for the actors who are getting shat on for what they're being asked to do because they're like, that's not true. That's not what they would do. And I'm like, that's what the writers wrote for them. Don't get mad at them. They're doing their jobs. But I feel like the series is having a really hard time portraying them as secondary leads. And they're having a hard time making them feel important to the audience. You know what I mean? Is that awful? It's just, this is the first. Now, granted, there have been many other veers Murta, off of the main Murta, plot, right?
I Murta.
Know. All the Murtas.
That's your biggest beef. But,
and then the Ian coming back. I mean, there's been all kinds of deviations from the main actual plot. But this one was like, it was all, there were moments where I was like, this is almost unforgivable. I don't know that I can get past this. If this is real, I don't know that I can get past it. We'll have to see. I am happy to see and wait to see what happens next week before I get really incensed leading into the next Droughtlander, which is coming before you know it, you guys. So we'll just have to see. And that was episode 511. Join us next week when we will be discussing the season finale of season 5. Join us next week when we will be discussing episode 512. I don't know the title yet, but we'll have it. It will be the season finale of season 5. And as always, if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation, go to www.outlanderpod.com/group.
Again, a very special thanks, huge thanks to co-producer Tori H. for this episode. And to find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, about what all of this co-producer stuff is all about, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon. And as always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/OutlanderPod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlanderPod.